Online Trading Academy's core strategy is patented and built on the timeless principles of supply and demand. Text Cairo to 57682 to learn how you can trade stocks using this patented core strategy. Text Cairo to 57682.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
And it is Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM, Seattle's News, Seattle's Talk. What day yesterday to see that Barbara Bush has passed? Yeah, I did some work for the Bush family back in the day. I used to work for the President's Foundation.
Is that right?
Yeah. I never got to meet her, but she was the talk of the office. That everybody who worked for the President's Foundation used to talk about Barbara in ways that they never talked about George H.W. Bush. That, and it wasn't that there was any disrespect at all for the first President Bush.
But why do you think that is? Why would she be the topic of discussion?
Here's the thing that they told me that stood out about Barbara Bush. As famous as she was, as well known as she was, I mean, the mother of a president, mother of two, a mother of a president, mother of a governor, wife of a president. She would go into a room and find a new staffer, someone who'd come onto the foundation recently, standing by themselves, not sure like what table to sit at lunch. And she would walk over and make her way over, come up and say, "Hi, I'm Barbara."
I love that.
And would introduce herself that way. There were people who told me, I never got to meet President Bush either, although I did this work for the foundation, that his private continence, that when, for instance, he would go have these weekends where he would ride with wounded warriors and he would paint with them. And he never would allow us to raise funds off of that first foundation, even though his foundation does really, really good work. He was the guy who would find the wounded warrior by himself. Hmm. And he would seek that person out. He'd walk over and say, "Hi, I'm George." And he would not rest until he got some sort of recognition that it's okay. I'm just a guy, just like you're just a woman or a man. And they said that the president, W. Bush, got that from mom and got the intelligence and many other things from her father. But I heard this of George W. Bush. She was on MSNBC, which is odd, I guess, politically. Barbara Bush was leaving gifts for people up until the time that she expired. This is the act of a loving, loving mother. As she's in the hospital, and she knows she's dying. She chose not to have care to extend her life.
Laura and I went over to see her a week ago Saturday, and we had a wonderful visit. She was strong, lucid.
Funny, still.
Funny. She and I were needling each other, and the doctor came in, and she turned to the doctor and said, "You want to know why George W. is the way he is?" And the doctor looked somewhat surprised. She said, "Because I drank and smoked when I was pregnant with him."
Okay, that's funny.
Okay, it is. And you know what else it is? It's pure love. It is that woman who was going to say, "I'm Barbara," taking her son and her daughter-in-law and putting them at ease. It is her saying, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And that is a huge gift when if you have the mindset to put others at ease when you are facing death. That is grace, the epitome of grace, really.
It is. It is the let me lift this weight from you. Like my dad told me, don't mourn my body. I won't be there. Promise me that you'll get your sister and your brother and you guys will go out. You'll eat my favorite food, pizza, and you drink beer. And you'll do that in celebration of me and that you will do that. And when we did that at the UW after my father passed here, I was in the bathroom at the pizza place and Turn, Turn, Turn by the Birds came on, which is biblical for every season. Turn, mm-hmm. turn, turn. Mm-hmm. There is a, you know, and there's a time for dying and a time for living. President Bush also said about Barbara Bush.
She had great faith. She truly believes that she is, there's an afterlife, that she'll be wonderfully received in the arms of a loving God, and therefore did not fear death. And as a result of her soul being comforted on the deathbed, my soul is comforted.
Right. You see what I'm saying about the comforting, the mother to the end, even though her son is now, I don't know, how old is President Bush? He's well into his 60s, 70s years old. And but that's still my little boy, George. That's still my little boy who I want to offer this comfort to.
71.
71 years old. This is still my little boy. I want to help my little boy be comfortable in this. I mean, it's remarkable that, she had that presence.
The other thing that I loved hearing her talk about is just the strength of her marriage. I mean, they've been married for over 70 years.
Yep.
And she just talked about how she was love at first sight from, you know, the moment they met.
Yeah.
She was so young. They were young. I mean, and then just to have, I mean, you, such a strong matriarch. I mean, you can see the influence.
There's no doubt. That was the presence. I mean, that was really what came across when I would be at the foundation. I arrived one time 10 minutes late to have met her, and my airplane was late getting into, that was in Dallas. And I got to the foundation and popped in, and the staff members I knew came and said, "Oh, you missed Barbara. You missed her by 10 minutes. They all so wanted us to meet her. And of course, you want to meet the president and Laura Bush, but they really want us to do that. We lost someone else. It's not on the same level, you know, and that's an awful thing to say. It is. It's an awful thing to say that an actor or anyone is not on the same level. But I mean, I guess it's not on the same level of fame or national recognition. But we lost an actor named Harry Anderson. And you, if you're my age or just a tiny bit younger, you might remember this music. Night Court. My wife and I pulled up an episode of Night Court, the first episode, the pilot episode, night before last, and watched this. And every time I see one of these, you know, shows from that time frame, I start to wonder, are we producing any shows now that 20 years from now people are going to look back and say, man, remember Strangest Things, or do you remember The Walking Dead, or are we producing any television shows today that matter in that way? So I wanted to ask everybody, right, by a way of getting there to these current day shows, to nominate one program from your past for Television Hall of Fame. And Ursula, I heard you whispering to Sean that you had two, and that's just not allowed. So you're going to have to pick one. There are tight rules. There's rules for a reason. Rules keep us safe in this program. Okay, so rules... Rules keep us safe. I save people. That's what I do.
I'm a rule breaker.
Not yet, because I'm preventing it. So if you were to nominate one show, like there was Night Court, which of course was this very, very interesting, creative, pretty liberal judge, wears jeans and a t-shirt, has a different way of doing things, and Bull, the big security guard. You remember sort of the plot of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the love interest, etc. So Nicole, you'll start. You nominate a television show from your past for the Hall of Fame, and then you will compare it to a television show today that you think could stand the test of time. You'll begin now.
So my pick
versus
one right now.
Yeah, one that you think could stand the test of time.
Okay, so my pick, I think this is probably obvious.
That's cheating by the mere presence of it.
Well, just because everybody knows that theme song as soon as I hit play is a good reason that it should be in the Hall of Fame, I suppose.
That's the theme song could be in the Hall of Fame, but tell me why the show belongs in the Hall of Fame. No, I didn't mean that. I love the Rembrandts. I knew that band, the Rembrandts, before that show came out.
Oh,
I was hip to the Rembrandts before y'all were, you kids and your acid and all the stuff you take and the torn up jeans and such. So defend this thing as a Hall of Fame.
Oh, I mean, I think it speaks for itself. It was just this long-running comedy
prima
that had a...
facie. This is not a court of law.
But it's also... there was one character for everyone to relate to, or everyone to fall in love with, or everyone... There was... I mean, there's all these conspiracies now because it should have gone one way, but it didn't. And that was the point, that it didn't go the way you think it was going to go, because the writing was better than that. And I love that show.
Okay.
And I think that... it is one of those shows you can watch over and over again, not get tired of it.
Anything today that relates, anything today that we're going to look back and write an article that we lost this actor of this show today, anything that's being produced right now?
There are some good shows. Like, I think that Modern Family and The Middle and some of these shows, but they're all from actors that have done something before.
Yeah, but
so I don't know if they're going to be, I mean, they're definitely, people will die for Modern Family. We'll be like, they were on Modern Family. Remember that show? But I don't know that they have the same hold up as Friends.
And here's what I don't think. I don't think we connect emotionally anymore to the television the way that we did, because I think we're oversaturated with it, right? That's what I think. Ursula, your one nomination and then one show today that you think has a chance at ever being, you know, remembered in the way that we fondly remember Night Court. Well, Night Court ran almost 10 years.
I know.
It was a really long-running show.
I mean, I was rattling off all these shows, and I realized I was rattling off shows that were in the 70s and early 80s. But I would say just removing what is currently going on with him in court, I wanted to say The Cosby Show.
Because of the music.
No, because of how it was, kind of groundbreaking for its time.
Okay, that I could absolutely see. You tell me why you think it was groundbreaking for its time.
Well, it showed the life of an upper middle class African-American family. I thought it was hilarious. I thought the topics were very relatable. I wanted to, be part of that family.
Yeah, and I agree because you had, were they both doctors? Cliff Huxtable was a pediatrician, or he delivered babies. Yeah, he was an OBGYN. He delivered babies. Then his wife, was she a lawyer? I think she was a lawyer.
Yeah, so there were two strong figures.
Strong professionals.
The mom played a big role,
yep.
Wasn't just, set off to the side.
Yep.
I mean, it just was very contemporary, and I thought it was really cool for its time.
Right.
Now,
and
everything
also,
that's going on right now, I just like,
I don't know if anything rises to that. I also like the fact that the family had really strict expectations of the kids.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I mean, there were so many lessons you could learn from each show.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
It is hard to put aside what's going on today because then you have what is apparently the real Cosby.
Ugh.
And that's tragic.
Horrible.
We showed my daughter that show, and it was during that time. She loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And, she's a kid of this age. And then the news broke. And my wife and I discussed, do we keep showing her the show? Do we keep, she's going to learn about this eventually. Do you think there's any show today being made that has that opportunity?
Well, I think the remake of Roseanne. I mean, it's just,
That's cheating. You don't get to do that. Remakes don't count. Sorry. You're just such a rod.
What did you say? That's so, what?
It's cheating. It's rule
breaking. Oh, I thought you said
something
else. Yeah,
I think the original would be in there.
The original should be in there. Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Working class people mm-hmm. presented in a way of unvarnished sort of real life. There are moms who stick their kids' heads under the sink and kick them in the bottom.
And, if you only watch the first episode of that remake, you're missing out. It is funny every week.
Like, yes.
It is
funny.
I grew up
around families, more families like that than even white versions of the Huxtables. I mean, honestly, I grew up around more people like that. All right, Sean, did you choose or did you choose to opt out of this, given your waiver that you have in the union and all?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna go with the segment.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
So go ahead and opt in now with your decision, your choice.
Sure. So for a show that I really enjoy from the past that I think should be in this Television Hall of Fame would be Perfect Strangers.
Sometimes the world looks perfect. Nothing to be
this
arranged.
Is the superhero who was
No, that's the greatest American hero.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this one.
So not only is this a great theme song that I like to sing at karaoke, but this is with cousin Larry Appleton and Balki Bartokomous, who Balki Bartokomous moves from a small country in Greece, a fictional country called Mipos, and comes to stay with his cousin, and they get into some misadventures.
Oh, but someone really famous came from this, a guy named Hanks. Was it Tom Hanks?
No, that was Bosom Buddies.
Okay, did anyone famous come from this? Because right now, who?
Well, there was a spinoff entitled Family Matters. Later in this show, there's the cop, the husband who's in Family Matters, was a security guard at a bank later in this show.
Okay.
But Balki Bartokomous is Bronson Pinchot. He came from this show and was in a lot of movies.
Okay, there we go. So that's the one defense I could make of this otherwise completely irrelevant program that Sean has chosen. I mean, that's it, Sean. I'm going to make a complaint to the union.
Well, you can do that, but they've got my back, Todd. And this show is great because it's got really great physical comedy, and it still holds up today.
All right, I'm going to now trump. Well, I don't want to use that word anymore. I will now establish for real which show belongs, and if you will be so kind as to roll that music, Sean. Okay, everybody knows. I just set the bar. So the show MASH. No, there's no argument.
If you could say so yourself.
There's no argument to be made.
Oh, sure there is.
No, there's not. I mean, you can, if you want to jump in at 98973 and try to somehow make an argument for one of someone else's choices, I'll tell you why. It's because it treated war seriously, it treated it tragically, but it also found human comedy in a place you'd have to have human comedy. It found that in a place you'd have to have comedy in order to survive. There have to be characters like that. There has to be the letting off of steam. It explored that. It explored, you know, some cartoonish versions of pro-war people, some non-cartoonish, some very serious. It played the entire spectrum of human emotion. It also took ordinary folks like the Alan Alda character and tossed them into a war they would never choose to serve in, right? A life saver in the midst of life taking. Then they took these incredible risks. One of the great risks they took was directorially. When Commander Henry Blake died, remember that, the first commander, when he left the show, the way they did that was they didn't tell anybody on the MASH acting team. So Henry Blake had left. They knew they were going to film a surgery scene to close that off. They handed the actor who played Radar O'Reilly, walked up and handed him a note and said, "Do not open this. Walk into the room and read it." Then they told the actors, who just thought they were setting up for B-roll surgery scene, they went in and told the actors that the guy who plays Radar is going to come in and he's going to read a note. So they're in there doing that, and he walks in and he goes, "Telegram. Commander Henry Blake's plane was shot down over the Sea of Japan. It spiraled into the water. There are no survivors." And the room froze. Hmm. And the camera goes in tight to Alan Alda. And he makes contact with the camera, eye contact. He looks up, looks at the camera, and he says, "Scalpel." It's back to work, right? It goes back to work. It doesn't end. And they did such a good job of that. Now, I would argue, and I have not, and I have to make the biggest apology to this audience, because it was here in front of this audience with this team, with Ursula and Sean and Nicole, where I said that The Walking Dead was not worthwhile. I have never been more wrong about a television show. I have never been more wrong. It's a discussion of the sort of world we want to live in. And this new season where they've captured Negan, now there's a break between Rick and his team.
Hey, spoiler alert, not everyone's seen the new season. Hey,
listen there, Slowpoke, if you can't keep up, if you're still watching on your millennial devices, that's going to be your loss.
Thanks, Todd. All right, I speak for the audience, too.
Just to throw out a couple listener suggestions.
Okay.
If I could have picked a number two, it would have been I Love Lucy.
Groundbreaking.
That definitely would have been.
Groundbreaking.
And then there's some others from listeners. Three's Company, The Office.
Yes.
Breaking Bad's a good one.
Simpsons, Family Ties, All in the Family, Cheers, X-Files, Saved by the Bell, Seinfeld. Yeah.
Do you know, Reed's...
It wouldn't be the Hall of Fame if there wasn't a hall of them, right?
No, that's right. There has to be a hall. One of the things about I Love Lucy was Desi Arnaz should have won a bunch of awards for directing because he broke ground in that.
Right.
All right, we'll come back in the Dory Monson Show. You know, if you want to start a business in Seattle, you're probably best off getting into heroin or meth. Certainly one of the things you don't want to do is start a home brewery, because King Kathy will come and slap you like a weirdo breaking into their home. Exclusive interview next on the Dory Monson Show. Todd Herman filling in on Kyrie. So joining us now on the Dory Monson Show, Todd Herman filling in, Melissa Earle with Lumberhouse Brew. Melissa, it is quite a story what King County has been doing to these smaller brewing companies. You had a license, you had a business license, all good to go, and then this mystery begins. You don't have a license, and now there's a brand new excuse. So, A, welcome to Dory's show, and B, what is going on with King County and you guys?
Well, we've been fighting a battle with King County for the last year or so. After being in business since 2014, we were confronted by the county claiming that our approval letters were not actually approval letters. We've gone to the state, and the state's looked at them, and they agree their approval letters. They're not sure why the county thinks they have the ability to come back now and say we're not licensed and approved businesses. But most recently, we've been able to uncover a document that outlines how they got a hold of liquor-licensed businesses and communicated new regulations, regulations that they should be currently functioning under, basic communication from the county to constituents with liquor licenses. And unfortunately, there was a huge gap. The list that we received was only for winery liquor licenses. If you know about liquor licenses in Washington State, there are many different kinds you can have. The one that Lumberhouse had at the time was a microbrew license, which allowed you to have a tasting room and allowed you to brew and produce your own products, as well as have the option for distribution. So we're unique in a sense with our liquor license in comparison to some who just want to serve beer or alcohol of any kind. So we had a little bit of a different license in that regard, which made us a little bit more unique, and they didn't really know how to handle it. And so based on what we've found, we've found that they haven't been able to communicate to liquor licenses residing within their constituency on any kind of updates or changes. And that's why they are now coming at us saying that we haven't been following their set regulations, which unfortunately they could never notify us of.
It's unbelievable. You guys would be better off cooking meth in an RV. I mean, you'd be left alone if you were cooking meth or producing heroin in an RV. Right,
you're not the first person that says that.
No, you'd be better treated. Did they also make some bizarre health claims? The King County, the King County administrators, who are, by the way, welcoming heroin into our community, which is why I made the connection. Are they now making some sort of weird health claims?
Yeah, they want us to. As of 2016, there was a new permit that they claimed they notified people of for the Food Protection Program related to beverage industries, and they tried to loop us into that. Anybody who brews beer, and I'm not sure if that extends to cideries or wineries. I know specifically that it tied to breweries. So that being said, we weren't able to gain clarity from them on what it is they were asking for. The only thing they ever cited to us was an FAQ sheet on their page on how it would apply to our business models, and it was very unclear. And when I called them to ask about it, the woman said, oh, you're right, that is unclear. Let me start changing the FAQ right now. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. Don't change the FAQ. You need to give us the information the FAQ is built off of. What study was done to give a pilot program the right to function in our constituency without a vote? That's concerning to me. Why were the people not allowed to vote?
Unbelievable. Well, I'll just remind everybody that there was a judge in our area. Her name is Veronica Alicia Galvan. She is a judge who has determined that King County residents aren't allowed to vote on health-related issues. Same King County that banned smoking in public spaces and legalized marijuana. We're not allowed to vote on that. Man, this is a nightmare. And this just continues. I wish there was a better way that we could support you. Is there anything we can do to press on King County? Is anyone at King County being reasonable with you?
Actually, unfortunately, yesterday we had a really bad interaction with District 3's council. She has basically said she doesn't want anything to do with this. And I find that appalling when directly after she her assistant hung up with me, I had another business owner in her constituency call to express how it has affected his business and how we being shut down does affect all the surrounding areas. So when he called, he was told, I'm sorry, we're not, interested in this topic anymore. Here's a different phone number for you to call. Thank you. Have a great day. And I can't believe that that's how citizens of our King County are being treated when they're calling with a distressing concern.
And who,
I don't understand how that's even possible. They're appointed to do that job.
And who's the district head of King County 3?
District 3 is Kathy Lambert.
Wow.
One of the people we thought was going to be one of our best assets. And unfortunately, what she claims to stand for, unincorporated King County, is not the case in when it comes to craft industry.
Okay, well, I'm going to reach out to Kathy because I've had no problem getting her on the show in the past. I'll reach out to her, see if she'll come on my show, and we'll see if we can settle this. So sorry you're going through this, and I was kind of joking about, maybe starting to cook meth, but maybe look into that, see if you get some venture capital money behind it, and maybe take that large because they'll stand with you on that. Melissa, my condolences as you're going through this. I appreciate you being willing to fight. Not everyone is.
So true, and we just believe in it so much. These are our rights and the way we live. This is the world we get to live in, you guys. And we want to make it the right way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Melissa. Thanks very much. Continue the battle.
Thank you so much.
And like I said, you want to start a business in King County, make it drug-related. Certainly don't make it beer-related. Coming up on the Dory Monson Show, remember the song Ebony and Ivory? USA Today made a shocking discovery about that song. I'll share it with you next on the Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM, Seattle's News, Seattle's Talk.
Thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. Industrious Office is just an amazing workspace right in the heart of downtown Seattle, right on 6th and Lenora, right where everything Seattle has to offer is on your doorstep. And at Industrious, you can start with the right size office and then scale up as your team grows. Go to industriousoffice.com/Cairo, schedule a tour, mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Cairo Radio listeners miss their favorite show, they find it on demand. Maybe you should be advertising here. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
Welcome back to Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM, Seattle's news, Seattle's talk. Just heard the promo. Cairo News has been really closely following what's going on with Starbucks. I tend to stand with my colleague and friend, John Curley, in that I don't have any proof, any indication yet that what happened at Starbucks was racism. It may have been. It may have been blatant, horrible, horrific racism, in which case the person who perpetrated should be punished and apparently has been punished. I just haven't seen the proof. I also observe in our culture at Scripps College, a student group was allowed to hold an a swim party for everybody but white people. And they promoted it as only for people of color. And I note that maybe this is me just observing society in an odd way, that there are folks who want us fighting, want us at each other's necks, right? And that they want not, don't want unity and agreement. They want this division. And it's political. And sometimes it's political. Sometimes it's foolery. Sometimes it's really reaching. I would love to have been an observer in the room at the USA Today editorial meeting where somebody came in and pitched a story. Got all the staff together, got up at the whiteboard. Hey, thanks for coming in. Had some ideas for today, some editorial views I wanted to take. Everybody remember this song? See, you know, right there, you're not woke. You just said you love this song.
You know what sounds so unwoke?
You just so you're
someone
not
our age who uses the word woke,
like USA Today's editorial board. They've announced that that song, Stevie Wonder, and Sir Paul McCartney, they've announced that song is insufficiently woke.
Because they
wrote. Ebony and Ivory, the 1982 anti-racism collaboration recorded by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, was declared politically incorrect for not being woke enough. McCartney and Wonder meant well with their hyper-literal interpretation of race relations, USA Today acknowledges, but their message of people are the same, there's a good and bad in everyone, so let's just get along, would be interpreted as hilariously naive by the more woke factions of today's cultural discourse. Okay, so there isn't good and bad in everybody. There's certain races of people who are pure bad. I'm not getting how this song is not a good attempt.
Do they go further in their explanation of that? Because right now, I would say that just sounds ridiculous.
Right. No, after that, they made fun of Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith, which was written by a gay man named Desmond Child. So they I could see that one being insufficiently woke in that Dude Looks Like a Lady, but it's written by a gay dude. But you listen to this song. This is two of the masters. Two of the masters. Stevie Wonder takes over. That's Paul McCartney.
That's Paul.
But what gets me in this is if everything is racism, nothing is racism. But then also the utter, like, I looked at this from the perspective of, hey, fun game, USA Today. So let's say all of us play a game where we take Elton John apart. Because I have determined that the song Tiny Dancer is malignant, anti-woman. It is promoting sort of the wage gap culture. It is, in fact, anti-female in every regard. This makes me sick to hear this music. It just sickens me. You listen to the pandering, condescending here. Listen to this. This makes you sick.
Blue jean baby.
A baby. A grown woman, a baby wearing blue jeans.
You're being so literal.
Okay, at least he says lady there. Oh, but this part.
Seamstress for the band.
What? A seamstress for the band? How is she not the leader of the band? How is she not the CEO of the record company? This is savage anti-female propaganda. Now, Ursula, you got to admit, the pretty eye thing, that is a cliche. What about a pretty mind? It still rhymes.
Well, you're assuming just because he says pretty eyes doesn't mean that she could have a great mind,
she's
too.
A seamstress for
you're
the band.
You're the problem.
She's a seamstress for the band.
And?
She's got a pirate smile.
You marry a music man.
And she had to go out and marry a music man. Now, it goes on that she's a tiny dancer. How come she's not a tall dancer of stature?
What's wrong with tiny dancers?
It is absolutely anti-female because it is a fact that women have a smaller frame in general than men do. All of it makes me sick. I'm submitting this to USA Today for another editorial. Am I off base?
Yes.
Well, wait a minute. How come I don't get to write for USA Today's editorial pages?
And I think, you know what, an editorial, it causes you to think. It causes you to argue. I haven't read the editorial, so I really don't feel like I can speak.
That's literally all they wrote about it. That's what they said about the song Ebony and Ivory.
And then you look at it and you say, you know what, disagree. You know, Ebony and Ivory was a great song. I think the overall message was perfect. Can you look at it and pick it apart? Sure.
Right.
You know, but that's not the point, and especially not in 1982.
Yeah, well, sometimes we need to turn to weird, weird places. Like, I listened to the song Jamie's Crying because I thought that's a moral song about the rape culture. If you really think about this, it's David Lee Roth warning women that men only want one thing. That's sort of woke. I mean, it is, right? Jamie's crying because this guy's loved her, forget her. And it's sort of a warning to young women. I mean, it's sort of a fun game. But we do sometimes, I turn from David Lee Roth to another moral leader of our universe, and that's the coach of the Washington State Cougars, Mike Leach.
Full of words of wisdom, man.
And do I have that sound? Because Mike Leach has, again, stepped forward to educate the world, this time on the topic of golf, something near and dear to my heart because I'm one of the people who understands that golf is not a sport. Can we roll Mike Leach? No, it's not. It's in
golf's pretty much for people that don't swear effectively enough or need practice at it. And so, I mean, there are those that need golf, and I don't think that I do.
And here's why.
You're going to hit that ball to a spot that you can't hit with a sniper rifle and a scope, but they're going to do it with a stick and a ball. They'll say, okay, if I just back off on my left, if I put a little more weight on my right, if I do this, the ball will go right there. No, it won't.
Sometimes it does. Well, the good golfer.
No, but see, that's why, that's not why, but one of the reasons that golf is categorically not a sport is because this is not arguable. It does
not. Archery a sport?
Yes. But golf is not because it does not contain elements of strength. It does not contain elements.
Sure it does. You got to walk the
greens. No, that's power. So walking the greens is not hard. Mole walking is not a sport. I mean, those Cinnabons can be pretty heavy. Right,
and it requires talent, and you have to.
I'm not saying it doesn't require talent.
Sure.
So does pool. So does billiards. That's a pursuit. It's a pastime. It's a hobby. It's a game. It's simply like video game playing does not rise to the level of a sport. It does not risk injury. It doesn't have with it. You don't need aerobic capacity. You don't need work capacity. You don't need any of that. You need balance
and power.
Kind
of black and white thinking. I'm thinking you can be on that USA Today board, be woke right along with them.
Woke as a determiner of what sports is. It's always fun to come in and get made fun of by your colleagues. Hey, it's Todderman in for Dory Monson on Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News, Seattle's Talk. Don't worry, Jenny Durkin is not done with ideas for spending your money. I know you all are sweating that, but no, she's been hard at work thinking about how could we get $636 billion more dollars out of the taxpayers. That next in the Dory Monson Show. Todderman filling in.